Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSP Magazine. Thank you for joining us for this conversation.
Record, and then Marco will get going.
Yep.
What do you think? Or should we just let our guest go on his own? We'll just...
Yeah, let him...
We'll go get a coffee.
Let him drive. Who are you? What are you doing here?
So my name is Daniel Cuthbert. I'm on the Black Hat Review Board, and I had the honor of reviewing a lot of submissions for Black Hat Europe.
Five or six submissions, I would imagine.
Yes, small amount. The good thing is that you always think, you know, with a global pandemic, there could be less research. But what we noticed this year, especially with Black Hat USA as well, is there was even more. And I think people, you know, besides making lots of sourdough and all the other things that, that they would do during lockdown, there was a lot of good research that is coming through. And that's why I've always loved doing Black Hat stuff, is that you get to see stuff that will impact people tomorrow, it will impact people in a couple of months, and it will impact people in years. And what I think we noticed this year was that there's a lot of good foundational stuff coming through. There's still the normal bugs are bad. You know, if you don't fix this, stuff is going to break. There's what I like to call the strategic style stuff, as in, here's a problem we think is going to be an issue in a couple of years, you know, and people can build upon that. And there's also some really good new people popping up from the research world, which is great. So it's a seasonal thing. You know, some years you'll have some countries a very strong, say, exploit dev, and then the other years you're like, wow, where did these people come from? So it's been quite good, even though it's been a very ugly, problematic, stressful, awful year from a security research side. We've had some really good talks. And again, that makes it quite hard from a review process, because there are only limited slots and we do review all, and you want to pick them all, and you're like, oh, which one do we pick?
Yeah. We have gone through these. This is one of our usual coverage that we like to do, and most of the time we like to be there. But of course, as you said, this has been the year that has been. And so, for the people that haven't figured out, this is about our coverage for Black Hat Europe. Yeah, I guess what we're very curious to know, and then I think our audience is curious to know, is there like a main theme? Is there like some criteria that this year you've been focusing on in selecting this many submission that, as usual, you get?
I wouldn't say there was a main theme. Each of the tracks have very good people who are, you know, living and breathing this stuff and reviewing it. And we get on the calls and we go through what we want to, you know, what we like, and we pitch it and so on. I wouldn't say that this year there was this big theme where all of a sudden it was about attacking X. Some of the messages are quite strong. So, for example, Pete Koop's first keynote, Hacking Government Cybersecurity, it's on the minds of everybody. You know, we saw what happened with DNC and the recent elections, and like... online stuff and stuff like that can be subverted. It's not hard. But it's not necessarily, say, you know, hacking voting machines. It could be using social media, which has proved to be incredibly effective. I mean, let's be brutally honest here. Facebook has turned into a tool that could be used to subvert billions. And what I like about Pete Cooper's approach is that he's coming at it from a government perspective, right, with background where you'd expect them to have. And he's also looking at, you know, how do you secure digital governments? Really, really hard question. Like, you don't just chuck a firewall on that and put a weapon and pray that good old Russians aren't going to do something stupid.
Sorry, you get your PCI compliance, you're all set.
Yeah, you know, there's a box for that somewhere. It's got lots of blue lights. But, you know, in light of COVID, with especially here in the UK, pretty much everything went online. Like, you couldn't go anywhere. I had to go to one of my banks to change my password, and believe it or not, and they made me queue outside for 2.5 hours. Wow. And the world is now, everything is online, and that is the same for government. You know, recently in the UK, one of the councils in London, Hackney, had a ransomware, and they got taken, and the net effect of that was that they couldn't pay out benefits. Direct impact on people's lives. It wasn't theoretical. It wasn't just a crash. There was no money going to the people that really needed it. So I think Pete's message is going to be really, really important, because it looks at, yes, this stuff can be subverted. It is bad. And we kind of need to do something about that because people are exploiting it, end of.
Yeah, absolutely. And Pete has a good perspective as well, coming from travel and aerospace, or more aerospace, which of course includes travel, which is critical infrastructure. So I think it's going to be an interesting perspective from that point as well. And I know there are other IoT, IIoT, ICS type talks as well. Did you get many of those from an infrastructure perspective?
Yes, and some really interesting ones. Like, you know, the industry has a lot of newcomers in it. There's not just a bunch of old fart hackers who, oh, I remember the 90s, that's how we did it. You know, there's new minds. There's, and I'm going to be honest, a lot of the good kids today who are coming in and hacking are far better than I ever was. And that gives me hope. It also scares me. So it's really cool to see how people are re-looking at stuff. One talk that stands out, Daniel Santos, Danislav Jos, and Amin, they looked at embedded TCP/IP stacks in ICS products, and they found a whole lot of vulnerabilities. And you're like, sweet, because we've assumed that, well, everybody looked at TCP/IP, right? It's done and dusted. Actually, no, there's still bugs out there. And they found some really good bugs. So we've not nailed that thing. And you know, these could be devices anywhere from medical devices, industrial controls, the lot. It's like there are still many things to be found. And I think that's what I'm liking at the moment. It's like we're still seeing more and more bugs that we've not seen in years, in decades, popping up, which is quite cool.
Yeah, and the other thing that I think, Mark, we even commented on, one might expect to see a certain group of folks from Europe submitting to Black Hat Europe. And it appears to be global, right? So an opportunity for a lot of people to come together. And maybe if you can, as you touch on that, the one you just described as a group of three people, are you seeing more folks coming together to do research and present it and from more places as well?
Yeah, there's definitely a collaboration aspect going along. We've always kind of had that from academia. You know, we have 900 people behind the submission, which we get. But what we're seeing is, you know, if you look at a lot of the submissions, there are two or three speakers. And, you know, I know for myself, when you work with somebody on research, it makes life a lot easier. There's less pressure on you. You get to pool your skills and you just get to bounce ideas off each other. And I think that's what we're seeing here. I mean, I'm just looking at a lot of the submissions. Big chunk of them do have two or more speakers, which is great.
Yeah, and you know, there are the very important conversation, like you said, the public opinion kind of finally, well, finally, I wish it didn't have to, but if there is something good about that is that the global audience, which is the everyday people, actually start getting to think about cybersecurity. And when it flies close, that's when you get the alarm going, right? So elections, of course, has been a big thing, and you know, when the data breach and all that kind of stuff. But I'm actually interested on how people may get a little bit more interested in what they use every day in their home. So IoT, I'm assuming there is a lot of IoT, and I see one session kind of interesting at hacking voice assistants with lasers, and that sounds fun.
Whenever you have lasers, I mean, come on, like
hello. It catches my attention. You know,
bring that into coops.
Lasers and shit. Yeah, yes, please.
Blinking lights.
Yeah, I mean, you know, why not? I think one of the worries that I have is that people become fatigued with the amount of doom and gloom that we have in the industry. You know, it doesn't seem like a day doesn't go by where something has been hacked and it's like, oh my God, it's been hacked. But so what? I think we as an industry need to be a little bit careful about that because we're always shouting and screaming and this phone's going to change everything. You know, it's got a logo, that kind of stuff. And I think that's what we've tried to look through and for on the review board is that what are some of the bugs or the pieces of research coming through that actually could help? Like IoT is a perfect example. We get that it's insecure. We get that you could probably take ownership of a Bluetooth-enabled vibrator. But what can we do about that? Right? Is it just a case of popping shells and, woo, look at that? Or is it, hey, why is IoT getting popped? Is it because the supply chain is a problem? Is it because the products are expected to be so cheap where there is no margin for actually doing a threat model or using secure chips or so on. I think that's where we need to shift as industry, say, like, it's great getting a shell and a dildo, but what are we doing to help those people in that supply chain? It's not just one manufacturer. How are we fixing that problem?
You had to bring supply chain into that same conversation. I don't know where you're going with that. But so tell me, did you see some of that context coming through in the submissions then, where it's more than just, hey, we found a vuln, here's how you exploit it, but they take it in the presentation to that next level of, well, here's, it's using this shared library and this affects lots of things, or it's using this common hardware component, so it's going to affect lots of things.
Definitely seeing more of a trend. There was a talk for USA, and I've forgotten the chap's name. I'm going to have to Google it. It was a Thunderbolt attack. Vulnerability in Thunderbolt, right? Everybody uses Thunderbolt. And there was no patch. There was only a patch for the last 2 years worth of products from like 2018 onwards. Okay, well, we all have older Thunderbolt devices. So does that mean we're screwed? And he could have turned around then and said, well, you know, duh, whoever's not going to release the patch. But he didn't. He actually created a patch. I'm like, wow, that is phenomenal. Like, kudos. I found a serious flaw. I took control of a computer using this flaw via a Thunderbolt device. But by the way, here's a utility to make yourself not get owned the same way. I'm like, that got a lot of respect for me, because it's being a problem, but also being the solution.
Yeah, I think this is an important point too, because it's all an ecosystem. And unfortunately, the news, they just take what is going to call more readers or get more clicks. So of course, an hack dildo, it's way more interesting for people to read than, I don't know, an energy grid that get a flower or something like that. But then in the end, we're all working for the same common goal, which is you make something secure, everything is more secure, the entire ecosystem is more secure. So I feel like we're kind of going there, and even if these news are a little bit more like rolling your eyes kind of news, but at least they get attention.
Yeah, I'm not going to dispute that. I do think all eyes on this problem are good. The fact that, you know, during the recent US elections, cybersecurity was on people's minds, which I think is phenomenal. It's no longer this weird niche thing. It's, hey, this is really important. Like, you know, it could be used to do X, or they could be subverted this way, or they're using social media to subvert this. And I think it's great that people now realize that this impacts a lot more than just that small group of weirdos in the basement.
Some realize it, some didn't.
Yeah.
So I'm big on ops stuff, workflows and business use cases and things like that. Any interesting presentations that get into how teams can set policy and implement controls and manage their team differently?
But that's a really good question.
Didn't mean to stump you.
No, you stumped me there. I can't think of any. And I think that's because the policy stuff isn't seen as sexy. Right. I'll be honest. Right? It doesn't make people go, I want to go to a Black Hat conference to see policy-based stuff. But it is, as you said, really important. There is one talk that probably touches upon that. I quite like this one. It's from Jason Rivera and Josh Burgess. And it's the talk about North Korea. Now, people are going, oh, God, not North Korea again. Please, seriously. Bear with me, right? Bear with me. What is interesting about this talk, and this kind of grabbed me, and I had a conversation with him during the submissions, is that it doesn't just look at the stuff that North Korea is doing. Everybody's done that to death. Every single threat intelligence firm has rolled out something that tells you about the latest malware that they're dropping. What Jason and Josh have done is looked at how did Fat Man Kim create possibly the world's best hacking crew? How did he evolve that? How did he manage to get all the teams working together? How did they enhance their skills? You know, how did they go from a fledgling cyber nation to effectively a global superpower in a couple of years? And they are very good. Like, you know, credit where credit due, annoying as it is, they're a really good force. So how did they bring all about that and build an amazing team? And I think that also looks into, you know, hiring, forced hiring, skills, capability, testing, all that kind of stuff. So maybe that goes into your question. Like, it could be used as a, if they can do it, you know, we could learn something from them, right? Because they're incredibly effective. Don't be like North Korea, but, you know, be better on the defensive side.
And yeah, how the investment came.
Yeah, why are they so good, in your opinion?
Personal opinion, need money. Yeah. They had sanctions. The fake currency wasn't working very well. The drugs market dried up. And stealing money from global financial institutions, you know, if you look at it from a geopolitical legal perspective, if I go and rob my local bank right now, it's a fairly well-trodden path that the police and other law enforcement and the Criminal Prosecution Service can take. I get arrested via local plod. Local plod will then go to the CPS and say, Daniel's been a naughty man. Shall we charge him? CPS, they say, yep, we've got a case. Go from there. How do you deal with North Korea that has sanctions where they're not based in the country, where they're attacking the bank? Local police have no idea what to do. So they'll kick it up to the higher police. Higher police then have to deal with, but it's North Korea, right? They've got big weapons. They'll probably kick it over to Home Office. Home Office go, oh, it's a bit tricky. What do we do? And I think that's what North Korea did very well. They knew that the red tape, the legalities, the fact that there's no single law around the internet, it's very hard. How do you deal with a man with nuclear weapons that's backed by other regimes stealing money from you? You kind of don't.
Yeah.
It just kind of happens. So back to the agenda. I know there are a couple things, and maybe this is a view into a bit of the future of where things are heading. I saw some stuff for Quantum, which is knocking on the doorstep, right? Any other topics like that that kind of say this is the future of research and this is the future of security that came through?
Yes. Sorry. I think ransomware is a problem that we really need to tackle. It's not getting easier, that's for sure. I think the last couple of weeks with Revil offering the $1 million and doing a recruitment process for pen testers and those who work in financial institutions and supply chain to come and join them is a huge, huge worry. Like, here is a ransomware criminality as a service business that's making a lot of money and can afford to advertise for new people. And that's a worrying situation to be in because they're obviously making a lot of money from it. So I think that's something we need to deal with. The Quantum stuff, at the moment, I don't think it's a big problem that people are making out to be. I think there's more serious issues that we need to deal with first. And there's some good ones. I mean, you know, I talked about the supply chain issue. It's a huge problem. We're still struggling with it. How do you deal with it? And if you look at a lot of the attacks that have taken place in the last 12 months, they've all been roughly supply chain. It's like you don't go via the front door anymore. You're going via the support networks. And, you know, as an attacker, that's what you would do. You go via the weakest target. So that could be something interesting there. Trying to think of some of the other ones. There was an interesting one in a Oday and PS4. I'm not a gamer, but I know that two consoles just came out. And I think a lot of people play games now. So it's interesting to see that old problems with hardware and browsers and trust zones, etc., are still around. That's Quinton and Mehdi Talbi. Should be a very, very good talk.
And do you know that one? Because gaming, it's not just that the game goes down necessarily, which would piss a lot of people off, but there are currencies in the game and points and values and other important things, right? Profiles and stuff like that. Do you know if the research is exposing any impact to those things?
They haven't said, and I don't want to take away any of their talk stuff. The reason why the talk appealed was that it's actually very hard to successfully exploit bugs in PS4 firmwares. Like, you just don't hear of them. So yeah, this is a phenomenal piece of research. And Sony did acknowledge it, which is always a big sign. So
Yeah, I have to say that it sounds and it looks like, I'm actually looking at the agenda as we're talking, that pretty eclectic number of topics. I've seen much more boring ones in the past, much more technical and much more in depth, which is what it's supposed to be anyway. But I see like more public and general interest that come in there. Now, we've done this. We gave you the go at the beginning of the conversation. You took it and you've been fantastic so far. So usually we start with talking a little bit about yourself. This time, Sean, I want to close with that. So what are you
going to talk about me?
No, I'm not going to talk about that. Okay. I know you way too long. I want to know from Daniel, what is your interest now? What are you focusing in terms of research and in the cybersecurity field? What is grabbing your attention lately?
I think it's still the privacy angle. I've been involved in understanding tracking and how privacy could be abused from when a colleague of mine, Glenn Wilkinson, and I pushed out research called Snoopy in 2011 that built a distributed surveillance framework exploiting bugs in wireless. And we could effectively track people, understand their pattern of life. And that kind of got me excited and really started to take me down the rabbit hole of, like, what are we giving up on the web? And I think with online marketing and ad networks where they're at now, which they do scare the living hell out of me, and more so with me now having kids who, you know, use their iPads to draw and watch YouTube Kids and all that kind of stuff, I spend an obscene amount of time understanding the traffic and understanding how trackers are working, what they're doing, what kind of data they're grabbing. For example, during lockdown, I'm sure everybody with kids joined up to Disney. And because it's easy, right? You know, kids love Disney films. What I think a lot of people don't realize is how much Disney tracks you. Like, I have never seen tracking like this. I expected it from the likes of Amazon and others, but Disney took it to a whole new level. And that was most of my evenings, right? Going through packet dumps, understanding what the iPads are doing, breaking down the videos. Okay, so they're now embedding trackers into videos, right? So they know exactly what you're stopping, where you're doing, all that kind of stuff. And I think that's what's driving a lot of my research at the moment, where I'm just become almost obsessive with what are the trackers doing, how are they doing, and how can we subvert this? There was a really, really good piece. I forgot the lady's name, but they said that basically by the time the kid's 13, there'll be 72 million data points collected about them on their online lives. And that genuinely scares me.
I'm going to make a comment on that because Disney has always been very famous for really making a science out of the way that they build their stories in the movies, even back in the 50s, the 60s, and their parks. I mean, you want to talk about physical tracking and knowing what people do when they are in line or what they like, what they don't like. I mean,
find Goofy.
Yeah.
Never know where he is.
Yeah, well, that's your interest. You know, you got to hack the system and find it. But my point is, we have now amplified all of that. And you just witnessed and brought up the power of now collecting data from kids living in their homes and not even going at the park and still probably knowing even more than if you were going at the park.
Yep. I think the 6 months of COVID lockdown was probably the biggest advancement, and people are kind of probably right and say I'm talking absolute crap here, but that 6 months of COVID lockdown, I feel, has given more to trackers and marketing and ad companies than ever in the period, because all of a sudden you now had everybody at home, right? And you had people doing stuff that we all did. We were bored. We couldn't go to restaurants. We couldn't go to pubs. What did we do? We bought shit. We browsed. We watched videos. If you are an online tracker, my God, this was heaven, because all of a sudden you have a captive audience and you're collecting data like never before, because it wasn't like before where they might come home and buy, but then they've got their mobile device or they've got a corporate device and they've got a corporate network. Now you have 24/7 patterns of human beings.
Yeah.
And ordering online. And
I was just talking about this last night. that the voice assistants, the personal assistants, are you're home all the time. So guess what? They're listening all the time as well.
The data collection is genuinely quite scary. I mean, you know, I do everything I can to make sure that the traffic coming around our network is acceptable, and I block trackers. And I think I'm just going to tell you now, on my block list at the moment, I've got 100,000 domains. And some of these people are sneaky. Like, you know, they know that the ad networks are being tracked and blocked. So they do stuff like, well, we'll embed the tracker into the CDN, because you can't block the CDN, because it means you don't get to the site. Like, wow, okay, that's clever. Or you go down a rabbit hole where some newspaper sites will be 10, 15, 20 JavaScript scripts deep where that tracker is embedded. So I'm sat on board, and I spend most of my evenings doing this. So I've got 131,000 domains on my block list at the moment.
Who needs the laser when you open you leave the door open? We don't need the laser to hack the assistant.
Yeah, very true.
Exactly. Amazing.
Exactly. Well, I have a gazillion questions, not related to Black Hat specifically. So I think I'll hold them, because Mark,
we'll have you back.
I got the stick if I ask more questions. But Black Hat, one of our favorite events. It's in Europe online. It is the 7th through the 10th, briefings and sessions, training and briefings, I believe, 2 days of each. And we talked, about both elements here, I think, and Pete Cooper, good friend of ours, opening it up with hacking government and lots of good stuff throughout. So, and you have a nice lock note on day two.
I do.
Kind of wrap things up. Yep.
You can come and throw virtual tomatoes at me.
That's right. You can ask you about supply chain.
Yeah. To the supply chain. Every lock supply chain. It's this year's AI.
Right on. Well, hopefully you'll see everybody there. And Daniel, appreciate you taking the time to give us some insight into all the sessions and everything going on. And good chatting with you beyond that as well.
Thank you very much. Appreciate the time.
Yeah. Thank you, Daniel.
Thank you.
If you enjoyed this podcast, share ITSP Magazine with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our columns. Thank you for listening.